Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 6th day of April, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And since there was so much hideously awful news this week, the kind of stuff that literally would have been unbelievable not too long ago, we need to start off with a bit of good news, so here we go. In a major victory, says Ethan Huff for Mike Adams' website, naturalnews.com, against the world's most evil corporation, used to be called Monsatan or something like that, as you probably know, before they changed the name. Now the IG Farben descendant Bayer owns them. Warehouse giant Costco, though, has had enough. And they've decided to pull from their store shelves not just Roundup, but all weed killer and herbicide products that contain Monsatan's deadly glyphosate chemical, shown through independent research for a long time now to cause cancer. And this follows the second court victory of its kind in just a couple of months. The latest, where a 70-year-old California man named Edwin Hardiman was awarded $80 million for a cancer he developed as a result of exposure to Roundup or glyphosate. And that was a bridge too far for Costco. They've decided to pull that carcinogen from their shelves. Hear, hear. The other good news comes from a far more unlikely and ironic source, home of the EU, Belgium, where a pilot project pushed by the telecom industry to provide 5G wireless internet and, metaphorically at a minimum, death on a platter, in Brussels has been halted by officials over health concerns. Imagine that. The Brussels Times puts it this way. In July, the government concluded an agreement with three telecom operators to relax the strict radiation standards in Brussels, but according to the region, and they capitalize it, it's now impossible to estimate the radiation from the antennas that'll be required to support the service. Quote, I cannot welcome such technology if the radiation standards, which must protect the citizen, are not respected, 5G or not, said Environmental Minister Céline Frémont to the press. The people of Brussels are not guinea pigs whose health I can sell at a profit. We cannot leave anything to doubt, she added. And this, says the coverage from Zero Hedge, after Belgian officials found themselves in an impasse last week over an agreement on the auctioning of 5G licenses. Here the story quotes a piece from Michael Snyder. Your host has been saying the same thing for quite a while. 5G cell towers, he writes, are more dangerous than other cell towers for two main reasons. First, compared to earlier versions, 5G is ultra-high frequency and ultra-high intensity. And this, folks, is because it doesn't go as far in the atmosphere or through walls or plants or people as well. They absorb it. And as a result, there have to be more antennas and transmitters closer to you. First generation 2G, 3G, and 4G use lower frequencies between 1 and 5 gigahertz, but 5G will use between 24 to 90 gigahertz, and it's important to remember that within the radio frequency portion of the electromagnetic spectrum, the higher the frequency, and thus the shorter the wavelength, the more dangerous it is to living organisms. Max Slavo of SHTF Plan, in turn, notes that author and activist Arthur Robert Furstenberg recently launched an online petition drive calling for various world organizations to urgently halt the development of 5G because they are harmful to humans. And speaking to the Daily Star Online, he noted that the coming 5G rollout is literally deadly. Quote, there are about to be as many as 20,000 satellites in the atmosphere. The FCC approved Elon Musk's project for 12,000 satellites on November the 15th, and he's going to launch his in mid-2019. I'm already getting reports, continued Furstenberg, from various parts of the world that 5G antennas are being erected all over and people are already getting sick from what's already there. And the insect population is being affected as well. Meanwhile, undeterred, Verizon on Wednesday announced they've turned on their 5G wireless network in two guinea pig markets, Chicago and Minneapolis. While Sprint and T-Mobile are planning their 5G rollouts later this year, unless people rise up against it, however, neither company, it says, has activated their networks yet. AT&T, for their part, is greasing the propaganda skids by rolling out what they call 5G Plus network in 12 markets, a.k.a. 5GE some places, even though it's still just really 4G frequencies, albeit a bit faster. That way, the usual suspects will be able to say, see, nothing bad's happened yet. Which does make an age-old point.
But that's not what's worrying me. It's how to do it. The These things must be done delicately, or you hurt the staff.
On then to some really bad news, but it's of a continuing nature as well. The Colorado Senate has become the latest to pass the absolutely unconstitutional, in more ways than we have time to count, so-called red flag gun theft provisions. And Matt Agrist at the Free Thought Project notes that this is one of those places where President Donald Trump also couldn't care less about his oath to the Constitution, saying famously, "Take the guns first, worry about due process second." And while his true base preferred to ignore that particular transgression, and the media's downplaying anything he says anyway, that's exactly what's been happening. Says Agrist, in just the first 6 months after the Parkland false flag and the president's statement, the Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, SICK, recorded a whopping 55 new anti-constitutional gun control measures in 26 states. And Colorado has just become the 15th state to pass the blatantly anti-constitutional red flag gun laws. And if, not if, folks, when, because the leftist governor in Colorado will sign anything, and the more tyrannical, the better. So when this abomination is signed, folks in Colorado, too, will be subject to having their property stolen on a whim, without any say in it or due process whatsoever. And given turncoat rhino senators like Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio, you can count on it becoming a nationwide abomination real soon thereafter. The so-called law, of course, not only removes the concept of due process, because those targeted are deemed guilty first and their property stolen right up front, and the targeted person doesn't even have to be there for the so-called court hearing. And forget about the concept of lawful notice, too. Under the 5th and 14th Amendments, notes Agrist, due process clauses were once in place to act as a safeguard against the arbitrary denial of life, liberty, and property by Big Brother outside the sanction of law. The very concept, of course, of stealing property under government sanction is a violation of the concept of private property, and virtually no one in the state houses or federal legislatures anymore even cares about their oath to that Constitution and Bill of Rights thing. Especially when it comes to infringing the you-know-what out of things that once weren't. The law is so egregious that even the Casper Milquetoast, when it comes to defense of the Second Amendment, NRA, or National Registration Authority, has spoken out on this one, despite their silence against other red flag laws, saying, quote, "Unchallenged statements made by a petitioner before a judge would be sufficient for law enforcement, SICK, to enter that person's home and confiscate their private property," unquote. Now, in fairness, there really is some honest law enforcement left in Colorado, and that's a very good thing when it comes to standing up against tyranny. I'm talking about the elected sheriffs of the various counties. We're fully 50 out of the 62 in the state, with obvious exceptions like the People's Republics of Boulder and Denver, have spoken out against this constitutional abomination. And as we reported here before final passage of this thing, Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams is not only willing to go to jail rather than enforce this thing, but he notes it puts cops in danger because they're showing up unannounced to steal people's guns despite no crime having been committed. Well, other than the one they're acting under color of law to do themselves. And if you remember, one person in Maryland is already dead as a result of exactly this kind of so-called law. And at this point, I do think it's important to read again from 16 Amger, or American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, section 177, about the general misconception, they note, that any statute passed by legislatures bearing the appearance of law actually constitutes law. The U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and any statute, to be valid, must be in agreement with it. The general rule, it says, is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose. Well, except for getting people killed, as in this case, since its unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment, and not merely from the date of a decision so branding it. An unconstitutional law, it says, in legal contemplation, is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Such a statute leaves the question it purports to settle just as it would be had the statute not been enacted, and furthermore, imposes no duties, confers no right, creates no office, bestows no power or authority on anyone, hear that, the remaining 12 sheriffs in Colorado, affords no protection, and justifies no acts performed under it. And furthermore, it concludes, no one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. Unquote. And I guess you could further add that those who violate their oath and commit an act of war against the American people in the process of trying to enforce or pass such an unconstitutional statute, remember Nuremberg, are committing treason and have become enemies to the Constitution, not just foreign, but domestic. Meanwhile, though, tyranny just took another giant leap forward in post-constitutional America. So whether it's divorce, a child custody battle, or neighbors feuding over a backyard fence, oathbreakers in Colorado have just added another very deadly weapon to the arsenal of the unscrupulous to take away what were once called God-given constitutionally protected rights. And the idiots have no idea how many people will now die as a result. And this is very serious stuff, particularly, I guess, in light of this next story. The Daily Mail headline about the Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen says, quote, "We're bringing all agencies together and asking everybody to chip in. Homeland Security Secretary reveals plans to send soldiers along the Mexican border and likens the immigration crisis down there to a Cat 5 hurricane disaster." Kirstjen Nielsen, it says, spoke on Tucker Carlson Tonight. After rushing back from Europe when Trump threatened to close the southern border, Secretary Nielsen said the Trump administration is treating the crisis like a natural disaster and revealed that she's looking into deploying soldiers along the border as well to tighten security. And as Carlson asked her, why wouldn't we put the U.S. military along our border if it's really a crisis of that magnitude? Well, she said, we're looking into that. We've made the request. I'm in constant contact with the acting Secretary of Defense. Specifically, she said, the president wants to end the catch-and-release policy that predated his administration and allows illegal immigrants to roam freely in the U.S. once they manage, by hook or by crook, to get across the border while they wait for an incredibly lengthening backlog of their cases to be adjudicated by immigration judges, which concurrently even take years. For his part, the president has released a new ad showing a video of 247 illegal immigrants crossing the border in January of 2019 near Antelope Wells, New Mexico. The pitiful excuse for offense there just barely slows them down, and like all along the rest of the border, they just keep on coming. On Thursday as well, on Fox News, the acting Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director, Ron Vitiello, sounded off about the border crisis too, saying, quote, this policy can't continue. The system is in a meltdown. It's just getting worse day by day. And maybe he was right, even prophetic, because the president, who had promised to shut the border down if it kept getting worse, by Friday had evidently caved again. As Zero Hedge seemingly appropriately characterized a number of stories, President Trump has punted on his plans for closing the southern border, telling a group of reporters later Thursday that he'll give Mexico a year to stop the invasion from the south into the U.S., or else, this time for sure, they'll do something. Quote, you know I'll do it. I don't play games. So we're doing it to stop people. We're going to give them a one-year warning. And if the drugs don't stop, or largely stop, we're going to put tariffs on Mexico and products, in particular cars. Unquote. And oh yeah, folks, that'll stop those millions and millions from keeping on coming in, won't it? Others, though, suggest that the latest Trump cave might have unintended consequences. Breitbart saying that on Thursday Trump backed away from his previous threats to shut down the border and instead's going to give him a whole year, suggests that the now renewed incentive to come on in could see illegal immigration across that same border more than double from current rates over just the next 3 months as a result. Princeton policy researcher Stephen Kopitz told Breitbart that over the course of the next 3 months, the Trump administration could see anywhere between 450 and 500,000 border crossings, a rate of illegal immigration at the southern border, double the rates even over the last 3 months, which has already seen almost 200,000 arrests made earlier this year. A 500,000, he said, over just the next 3 months, quote, would not surprise me. And he thinks we'll now see a political crisis by the middle of July, adding that Trump should have drawn the line here. Well, gee, folks, some people mistakenly thought that he already had. This next item is really in two parts. The first one, a story out of Texas, and the second one, a really brilliant suggestion about what to do about it when it comes to one of the biggest existential crises ever to face this nation. The border crisis is real, says the first one, a piece from J.D. Hayes at Natural News. Texas cities are now being overwhelmed with tens of thousands of invading migrants. As socialists and those who seek to destroy this country, cheer them on. In February, it begins, POTUS Donald Trump, acting on the advice of Homeland Security officials and counsel, declared a national emergency along the southern border of the U.S. with Mexico. And not surprisingly, painting that declaration with the usual broad brushes of bigotry, racism, hate, and you've heard it all before, Democrats wasted no time in mounting opposition, which sailed first through an anti-American far-left House, then later the Senate, forcing the first presidential veto of Trump's career, which the House was unable to override. And rather than deal with the already out of control and growing crisis, leftists have pivoted to other issues far less important or pressing, like the need to disarm the American public so they'll be easier fodder for the invasion from both within and without, the president's taxes, continuing the cover-up of the Mueller witch hunt while claiming the opposite. Oh, and let's not forget creepy Joe Biden, something we've known about for years. That's more important, too, isn't it? Meanwhile, seasoned Border Patrol agents and others living along the southwestern boundary of the formerly United States are now witnessing and talking about a crush of illegal immigrants in numbers never seen before. And the country's ability to handle all of this has been overwhelmed. The Wall Street Journal reported in early March that Border Patrol arrests of migrant families reached an all-time high. CBP has declared that the system is, quote, at the breaking point. You've heard some of the numbers. We've talked about them here. Over 66,000 people arrested. That doesn't count the ones that didn't get caught in February alone, which is why catch and release remains such a big deal, with a number of invaders generally expected to cross a million this year alone. And among those masses, lots and lots and lots of repeat offenders. For example, the Tucson Sector Border Patrol alone, in the month of March alone, has nabbed 16 previously deported and convicted sex offenders back for another try. As I mentioned the other day, CBP Commissioner Kevin McAleen said the situation is not sustainable and the, quote, system is well beyond capacity and remains, unquote, at the point of failure. The numbers, he said, are just overwhelming the entire system. And it's cities along the border in Texas that are especially hard hit. Listen to this one. McAllen, Texas, for example, according to USA Today, hardly a conservative or Republican media organ, has reported that asylum seekers are being released into the city at a rate exceeding 800 per day. That's over 24,000 a month into one town in Texas. A whole city's worth every year, said McAllen City Manager Roy Rodriguez. It's staggering. Really, we've never seen anything like this before. As Hayes concludes, correctly, record apprehensions, services taxed beyond their limits, and American cities pushed beyond their capacity to handle the overflow of humanity sounds like a pretty convincing national emergency. And, of course, he left out the part about completely destroying the fabric of a once cohesive nation that understood certain self-evident truths that are no longer even on the radar in Congress, much less the invading masses. Which leads naturally to the follow-up question, what can Americans do about it with, as Cicero once noted, so many invaders already within the gates pushing for still lots more? And here I turn to a great suggestion from Mike Adams, also at Natural News, of course. I'll skip over his suggestion as to why, that it has to do with voting, which is about 1% of the problem, folks. Literally, what's being destroyed here, as I've mentioned, is the entire social fabric of a nation that was once built on concepts from the Declaration of Independence, as opposed to what it's clearly becoming now, rules for radicals, the Communist Manifesto, and Mein Kampf. But Adams does nail this. These people are fleeing exactly what they're seeking to bring here. And if they're allowed to overrun America, he says, they'll destroy this nation, just like they've already destroyed the countries they're fleeing. If allowed to invade, occupy, and take over America, these illegal immigrants will destroy this nation from within. Which leads him to a brilliant solution, right smack out of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. And what your host really loves about this one is it doesn't rely on a questionable, to put it mildly, claim that everything in America with a K needs to be done at the stroke of a pen, at least if it's the right imperial pen, in the name of an emergency. which is in fact exactly how we started down this road to hell and perdition in the first place. But now, some emergencies are more equal than others, too. Well, here's the key line from Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 15. Congress shall have the power to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. And it continues, and they'll have the power as well to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, etc. And no, folks, this was written long before there was any such thing as a National Guard. And in case there's any doubt, you can quote some of the founders, like Representative Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts, from the discussion concerning the Second Amendment in August of 1789, quote, "What, sir, is the use of a militia? It is to prevent the establishment of a standing army, the bane of liberty. Whenever governments mean to invade the rights and liberties of the people, they always attempt to destroy the militia in order to raise an army upon their ruins." In Federalist 46, James Madison wrote at length about the advantage of being armed, which the Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation, and how the militia forms a barrier against the enterprises of ambition, more insurmountable than that which any simple government of any form can admit of. And he went on to basically berate several kingdoms in Europe, where he said, quote, "The governments are afraid to trust the people with arms." Founder George Mason said famously, "I ask, sir, what is the militia? It is the whole people, except for a few public officials." Later, that was codified in 10 U.S.C. 311 as generally, with some additions and subtractions, of all able-bodied male citizens at least 17 years of age up through 45. All of which brings me to Adam's brilliant and ultimately very constitutional suggestion that the central government and Congress in particular is specifically called upon in the Constitution to call out the militia to, quote, "suppress insurrections and repel invasions." And there's no more clear example, he notes, obviously, than an invasion of our southern border than we're witnessing now, with 100,000 plus illegals each and every month attempting to violate the law, in many cases do it by trespassing across private property, and get to all the goodies, freebies, handouts, and sanctuary cities. The invasion, says Adams, needs to be repelled by all kinds of means, and while building a wall is one step toward achieving that goal, remember, even walls can be tunneled under, and of course, if there are people within opening the gates, it doesn't do much good either. Government spending, though, will always be tied up by socialists who quite literally want to see America overrun. Obviously, they don't care if America is destroyed as long as they get to rule over the ruins, he notes. But the militia is able and capable of responding right now to the crisis at the borders. President Trump merely needs to activate the militia, he suggests, by calling on them to help repel invasions. And if you think about it, folks, given that a whole lot of ranchers and farmers and others along the southern border literally simply need presidential permission to say, hey, you know what, that which you could always do at one point, which was to defend yourself, your family, and your home, you darn well need to be allowed to do again, there would be a whole lot of motion in the right direction. Oh, and at this point, I do note that for those who worry about bloodshed, don't kid yourself, they're headed there already at warp speed. And if this latest Trump cave does succeed in producing an outright incredible beyond-the-pale political crisis by summer, maybe he'll have an excuse to do what he should have done this week. From that moment, says Adams, likely tens of thousands of armed American volunteers would head to the border to defend this nation against this lawless attempt to overrun, occupy, and ultimately overthrow what's left of the United States of America. Yes, it would be nice if Congress would do their duty, too, but that's not likely. In the meanwhile, the president has a bully pulpit, and a few tweets along the lines of calling out the militia would certainly be the most important thing he's ever used that bully pulpit for, especially if it actually gave people the impression that he'd pulled out a copy of the Constitution and read it. Oh, and just imagine what it would do to the opponents of the Second Amendment who don't think the peon should be allowed to keep and bear arms anyway. Those of us who understand history and human nature not only know better, but we know why. But we'll be right back. Just like yesterday, then I'll get on my knees.
get reptile with a grin.
Welcome back now to the second segment of the show for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and when we went to break, I was essentially talking about what Cicero warned about so many centuries ago. The enemy within your gates, and I think he might have been referring to Congress, is even a bigger threat than the one that's invading from the southern border. But I closed out the segment with that discussion of Article 1, Section 8 from the actual Constitution, talking about calling out the militia, which is the whole people, to repel invasions. And if you think about it, even for a second, encouraging the citizenry of these once free and united states to actually use their firearms to defend their property and families beats the heck out of coming and killing them and taking that stuff away so that invaders can come in and pick over what's left. Bottom line here, folks, we're at a cusp, a decision point, where things tip permanently one way or another. So let's kick this half off with a related story, this courtesy of Vicki Batts at Natural News, about left-wing cities, and that's most of the really big ones, going increasingly lawless. Boston has become the latest example, where police have been ordered to, I can't believe this, but I'm going to read it anyway, stop arresting criminals for property crimes, things like breaking and entering, shoplifting, or destruction of property. Leftist policies, it says, are reaching new levels of insanity in the People's Republic of Massachusetts, or Taxachusetts. Suffolk County DA, sick, Rachel Rollins, wonder if she's on Soros' payroll, has pushed her highly contested no-prosecute list into action. This so-called list gives a green light to a number of otherwise arrestable offenses, including trespassing, shoplifting, disorderly conduct, and wanton or malicious destruction of property. In other words, law enforcement is being told to stand down by the district attorney while miscreants steal and destroy property. And guess what? Everybody else is being disarmed, so the miscreants won't have to worry about you being able to stop them. The directive from Rollins also orders police to refuse to cooperate with Immigrations and Customs Enforcement when it comes to arresting illegal immigrants at the courthouse, no matter how severe their crimes are. Well, as she asks, what could go wrong? It's being called the Rollins Memo, and it's been met with substantial scrutiny, as it ought to. Truth be told, though, folks, this is just another front in the increasingly obvious civil war against the American people and their former constitutional form of government. Item, and this fits here under the how it's being undermined category. Attorney Jonathan Mosley, writing for the American Thinker, tells us about the latest scheme to turn gun owners into criminals, and latest scheme is kind of tough to keep up on because they add new ones literally five times a day. But in any case, gun owners, he says, they're coming for you. On March 21st, a Fredericksburg, Virginia man was prosecuted and convicted of the misdemeanor crime of merely holding a BB gun in public, and as it turns out, on his own property. I know, he says, because I was in the trial as the attorney defending Mr. Wolf. And it looks, he says, like the concept of keeping and bearing, that word, is the next thing to be struck from the Second Amendment. Now that anti-constitutionalists have pretty much succeeded in criminalizing gun ownership in so many places, the next step is that you're automatically a criminal if you take a gun out in public. So basically, he says, even if they allow you to own a gun and keep it, but if they know, they won't, you can't even take it out of its case. Liberals continue to try to criminalize private ownership of guns despite losing the D.C. versus Heller case a few years back because their battle to disarm the American public is never ending. And now they're trying to claim it's illegal to even open carry a firearm. The mere existence of a gun, if anyone else is around, has now become the crime of brandishing and or assault, which means frightening people, contrary to popular misunderstanding, or both. In Virginia, says Mosley, in the Fredericksburg General District Court, my client was charged with two counts of brandishing a firearm. He cites the Virginia Code, so-called statute, and two counts of assault under the all-purpose, i.e. vague, Virginia Code Section 18-257 for a single incident that took no more than 30 seconds. In the early morning of January 3rd this year, Mr. Wolf, who, because of the pain of his injuries, didn't sleep well at night, heard a loud commotion in the private athletic club of the parking lot next to him. There's been a history of trespassing, drunken parties, and police activity there. He's often described seeing flashing blue lights of police cars filling his living room over the years. And he also knew the parking lot was blocked by a cable and a lock, so anyone parking there would be committing a crime of trespassing, especially if they broke the cable and the lock. He testified he didn't know what was going on, so he took a BB gun, which isn't much, but at least it was for his own protection. Standing in his own yard, he shot it across the fence. "What are you doing there? That is private property." Whereupon one of the trespassers shouted, "He's got a gun!" And the man and woman then walked away calmly, never bothering to answer his question. He went back into his townhouse, thought the incident was over. But this is politically correct America with a K now, remember? Nobody even suggested that he ever pointed his BB gun at anyone, nor that he waved it, nor flourished it, in any kind of an ostentatious or angry manner. In other words, the legal dictionary definition of brandishing. In fact, after incident video confirms all agreed, he kept it pointed in a safe direction. But he was, in fact, arrested for 2 counts of assault by intimidation and 2 counts of brandishing, purely because the 2 people claimed they were afraid. Note, there were 4 counts alleging 2 victims from the same incident. So, says the attorney, if you have a gun around 10 people, you can now be charged with 20 misdemeanors from 1 single act. Call it a word to the wise if you ever have to ward off a mob on your own property with a gun. Even though the statute should have been void for vagueness, says the attorney, because there's no standard for what constitutes being afraid, very afraid, or just hating the idea of somebody being allowed to actually have a gun. There are no standards to follow. What's brandishing? Nobody knows. There's no definition in the statute. But the bottom line seems to be this. If there's a way to turn a gun owner into a criminal for the act of using a firearm for its intended purpose, they're going to outlaw it and criminalize it. And yes, intimidate people from the idea of ever having it to begin with. We'll follow that up with a few observations from Dr. Paul Craig Roberts on a different aspect of the police state, and in this case, the so-called Child Protective Service, Gestapo. My generation and that of our children, he said, grew up without CPS, and we stand up pretty well compared to subsequent generations because Child Protective, SICK, Services is an extremely intrusive government agency that would not have been tolerated in our generation simply because the power of this police state agency trumps parental rights and responsibilities. They're also a very important part of the continued destruction of liberty, he says, that I've witnessed over my lifetime. The Gestapo power the state now wields over parents is a creation of so-called child advocates who believe that it is Big Brother's function to protect children from parents. One consequence has been to erode parental control and effectively end it in the case of rebellious children who respond to punishment by calling CPS and ratting out their parents, whereupon they have powerful incentives to seize children to justify the agency's existence, and they get a federal payment for each child seized. And here he asks a really great question. Why has child safety changed so much over my lifetime that children now need a police state agency to protect them? Why is it that I and my 5-year-old classmates could walk alone to our neighborhood schools, for example? But such a thing is unthinkable today. Could it be the destruction of homogeneous neighborhoods by diversity, or the redefinition of parental control? Or could it be the various forces that have broken up the family that might have something to do with it? Those of us old enough to remember before political correctness and progressivism run amok can remember when most children had 2 parents, 2 sets of grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, all in the same geographical area. In many cases, there was tremendous support for both marriages and children. Divorce was rare, especially compared to today. Families went to church, an important mission of which was to inculcate and reinforce moral and ethical standards of behavior, as opposed to what they're being taught nowadays in the public cesspools, which is the exact polar opposite. The father's income, too, before the runaway taxation and inflation, was enough to support the family, so mothers were often at home and able to provide child and household services. But today, both parents have to work and don't have a clue what's going on or what their kids are being taught. The support systems, writes Dr. Roberts, have been swept away. Corporations transfer employees to relative free geographical locations, increasing stress on marriage. Divorce breaks up families, creating animosity where once there was support, and identity politics has produced a disunited population, while mass migration has brought multiculturalism where once there were actual shared standards. Over the course of my lifetime, he says, I've watched the destruction of America's social capital, shared norms, understandings, values, cooperation, and trust that once made the society functional. In the dysfunctional society in which Americans live today, government tries to glue things back together, and I think he's being too kind, by exercising more power, regulating speech, controlling explanations, and imposing more constraints on human action. Honestly, folks, I think the opposite is true. They're seeking to destroy the family, and they've been pretty blankety-blanking successful at it. Says Roberts, the consequence that we're seeing, though, is the death of liberty and individual responsibility and the erasure of a nation. Obviously, we can't talk about the breakdown in the rule of law without at least mentioning the major act of sedition, yes, outright treason, that's been in progress now for quite a few years, but it's come to a head over the last couple. Comes courtesy of Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit, and it says, Clapper sings. On Monday, the former director of national intelligence, sick, Lion James Clapper, went on CNN's Lion Anderson Cooper, evidently another CIA good buddy, to discuss the Mueller report after its release last Sunday. And as you already know, the wasted two-year witch hunt produced nothing in the way of collusion, unless, of course, you count Mueller, Hitlery, and Uranium One. And Clapper has been a notorious defender of the Obama regime and its spying on their political opponents during the election. But what is interesting is that Clapper did actually implicate his boss, Bathhouse Barry, in some actions that are obviously a lot worse than the press has been accusing the president of, the elected president. Said Clapper, in response to a question, one point I'd like to make, Anderson, that I don't think has come up very much before, and I'm alluding now to the president's criticism of President Obama for all that he did or didn't do before he left office with respect to the Russian meddling. If it weren't for President Obama, we might not have done the intelligence community assessment that we did that set off a whole sequence of events which are still unfolding today, notably Special Counsel Mueller's investigation. Sick. But here's the key, folks. Quote, President Obama is responsible for that, and it was he who tasked us to do that intelligence community assessment in the first place. I think it's an important point when it comes to critiquing President Obama. Unquote. And, well, I guess it's a bit late to say let the prosecutions begin, isn't it? But it looks like the triangulation certainly has. Maybe Clapper didn't get the plausible deniability memo. That brings me to a couple related stories that also have to do with the issue of, well, trust. Starting again with the public health disaster that is 5G being unleashed upon a gullible public, isn't it ironic that the same people that tell you, be afraid, be very afraid that your neighbor might have a gun to defend himself, or might be reading a copy of the Constitution when no one's looking, or, heaven forbid, well, I guess you can't say it that way, even a Bible... But don't worry your pretty little dumbed-down head about what we're fixing to do to your brains 24/7 via 5G. Stephen Stanford at the All News Pipeline summarized some of the recent stories about just how many people are waking up and telling folks, those that'll listen, about the dangers of this particularly insidious and soon-to-be-pervasive technology. He puts it this way, a public health disaster is being unleashed upon America that doctors warn is causing heart problems, cancers, and brain tumors, and we're only now beginning to see the tip of the iceberg. He reports that Alex Petrowski over at the Waking Times reported on March 12th about a group of 250 doctors and scientists from more than 40 different countries that have recently signed that petition to the World Health Organization and United Nations as if they could be trusted to fix it. About the well-documented dangers of radiation from existing Wi-Fi, cell phones, and Bluetooth, urging that this new rollout of even shorter wavelengths be more carefully studied. Of course, that ignores the fact that the military already has. That's why they're rolling out millimeter wavelength weaponry based on these same frequency ranges. And additionally, warnings about the safety of the new 5G technology include the California Brain Tumor Association and a public warning they've just issued. Dr. Joel Moskowitz at the University of California, Berkeley, comments about Apple's wireless AirPods, for example, that, quote, communicate with one another using a magnetic induction field, a variable magnetic field sent directly from one side of your brain to the other, if you're silly enough to stick these things deep in your ears, so that they can communicate and pump sound into your head, too. The doctor, who focuses on cell phone exposures, notes there isn't even research yet on what this could do to the brain, let alone regulations, as if that would matter, to limit the potential effects. ANP goes into some detail, as we have here a number of times in the past, concerning the use of 5G frequencies by the Pentagon for what are called active denial systems, operating at 95 gigahertz to penetrate the epidermal layer of skin on a targeted individual and produce an intolerable heating sensation that immediately causes them to flee. That's tougher, of course, if they're penetrating into your living room or bedroom. This technology, it notes, is becoming ubiquitous in top world militaries, demonstrating how genuinely effective this radio frequency energy range can be used to cause harm to humans and anything else. And since both Big Brother and his waste-stream media are a lot more concerned about firearms than they are 5G, I'll close with a quick recap of some of the many documented problems that this new technology will soon unleash en masse among gullible Americans. Biological effects include DNA chain breaks, increased blood-brain barrier permeability, disruption of brain glucose metabolism, creation of stress proteins, and disruption of cell metabolism. And studies also associate Wi-Fi radiation exposure with symptoms including fatigue, irritability, headaches, and digestive disorders, as well as a whole bunch of cancers. As to what you can do, of course, the answer is if you have a choice, and you won't in most of the major leftist metropolitan areas. If there are already needles and feces on the streets, don't worry, they got something worse planned to invade your home. So by all means, get the you-know-what out of there while you still can. In more rural areas, just learn to say no. Don't let the damn things on your property. And for crying out loud, don't ever consider buying a 5G phone. Yes, they are planning on launching that deadly array of satellites, but even there, remember, the satellites will use steered beam arrays to focus on people, little targets, if you think about it, that are carrying the 5G phones. So even there, you're safer if you don't have one of those things anywhere close to you. In other words, keep your distance. Stay away from 5G at all costs. Measure RF levels, if you can. Buy electromagnetic field shielding, if you can. And some of the other things should be obvious, too. Protect your home, eat a healthy diet, and educate yourself. Oh, and there's this. I guess I'd think of it as a related piece. Don't trust Big Brother, who has a clear interest in controlling and perhaps even killing you, to protect you from things that he's not only opening the door for, but preventing, via the FCC, local governments from prohibiting. How's that for not really having your best interests at heart? Of course, you probably already knew that when he started trying to tap your phones and take away your guns. So let's go to this piece by Richard Gale and Dr. Gary Null, courtesy of lewrockwell.com, where I saw it, as well as its original source, globalresearch.ca, about America's medical deep state, the Centers for Deadly Contamination, or CDC. Yeah, we've probably all been told it stands for something else. For over two decades, it begins, American families have faced an unscrupulous foe that threatens, not protects, the public health and welfare. It's a rogue, unmanageable institution within our FedGov, now seemingly beholden solely to private interests. Citizens, it says, have been horribly mistaken in believing that the nation's leading health sick agency, the CDC, honors its mandate to protect the public from dangerous health threats, both domestic and foreign. We're expected, it says, to assume the CDC relies upon the most advanced and cutting-edge medical science and data to make its policy decisions. But hey, just like they do with global warming, there are other places that bread can be buttered, don't you know? The agency's history of corruption and fraud contradict that pledge, as outlined on its own website. And instead of protecting the health security of our nation, the CDC uses bromides and meaningless pageantry to hide its true nature. During the past year, it continues, especially over recent months, the fear-mongering springing forth from the CDC has become downright virulent, a classic Orwellian script. The recent measles outbreak, although nowhere near as alarming as flare-ups of bygone eras, have been seized upon as an opportunity to try to brainwash the public, censor it into insignificance, and reshape the obedient livestock out there in order to increase, Achtung, vaccination compliance. And worse, it says, this disinfo campaign ignores everything we know about measles infection and failures of the, well, it should be anyway, infamous MMR vaccine. Unfortunately, we're no longer permitted to even debate the pros and cons of the measles vaccine. Write the authors, the CDC consistently shuts down debate when its decisions are challenged, and now, of course, Big Brother's socialist media public-private partners are participating in that effort. Physicians, medical researchers, immunologists, and former vaccine advocates who challenge the loose claims for vaccine safety and efficacy are now frustrated and eager to publicly debate the best vaccine advocates the CDC and vaccine industry have to offer. But none will take up the challenge because science is clearly not on their side. On the other hand, bought and paid for pseudoscience, aka the whoring side of the equation, certainly is. The agency consistently fails, they say, to conduct and apply the gold standard in its own medical research and ignores the best independent, peer-reviewed science. In short, the agency has become a mouthpiece for the pharmaceutical industrial complex and operates to its own financial advantage rather than the benefit of society. Now, folks, those of us who understand the way government works would have said, hey, that should have been obvious. It's what always happens. And it's been going on in other industries and other regulated bed partners for a long, long time. It's no surprise, they continue, though, that documents obtained through FOIA requests paint the CDC as rotten to its core and one of the greatest health threats to the nation. In Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s words, it's a, quote, cesspool of corruption. They do contrast it briefly with something called the Institutes of Medicine, which they note doesn't have CDC's legislative clout, but does represent a far superior body of actual scientists and researchers in the medical fields, even though it, too, is lately starting to be co-opted. It was founded in 1970 under the charter of the National Academy of Sciences and has a long history of, well, basically do-gooding. But skipping ahead here, over the course of 20 years, says the story, the IOM has monitored and reviewed medical literature to determine the most and least likely injuries associated with specific vaccines and provided recommendations to the CDC. Yeah, they generally fall on deaf ears. In 1991, they identified 22 illnesses, 6 confirmed as vaccine-related, and 12 called uncertain due to insufficiently reliable studies. But those cases with confirmed causation included learning disabilities, attention deficit disorder, and childhood diabetes. All of this, it says, was data collected subsequent to President Ronald Reagan having signed the abomination called the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Act, which has had the effect of basically shielding the industry, and it was the point at which autism rates started to climb exponentially. 3 years later, the IOM identified 54 medical conditions, and the medical literature supported 10 diseases as vaccine-induced and 38 now uncertain. But among the confirmed illnesses were seizures, demyelinating disease, sterility, transverse myelitis, and for the first time, SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome. Again in 2011, the IOM reported a whopping 155 adverse conditions, 16 of them vaccine-induced injuries supported by science, including a correlation between DTaP vaccine and, say it with me folks, autism. There's a lot more in here, as you might expect, things showing that there are some real problems with vaccines that Big Brother's partners don't want you to know about, much less talk about, and more data as well about CDC's criminality, favoring private pharmaceutical interest, destruction of clinical data that showed correlations that they don't want people to know about, silencing of internal officials and whistleblowers, and basically carrying water for their real masters. But the CDC's crimes, summarizes the article, are a matter of public record. Most of them aren't even secrets. The documents and voices of the whistleblowers on the CDC can, at least for the time being, still be found on the Internet. But it's the media that's again failed to do its job accurately reporting on federal corruption. And instead, they have all become an instrument of the medical deep state and a mouthpiece to deceive the public. Given their culture of deception, why would you trust the CDC to protect yours or your children's health? which leads to the general bottom line. Don't trust them to take your guns or your kids or to infiltrate your homes with poisonous radiation or your bodies with vaccines containing thimerosal, mercury, adjuvants, and who knows what else. What you don't know and deliberately aren't being told can not only hurt you, it can and will kill you. It's not only important that you know where to put your trust, the converse may save your life as well.